You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Tilehurst End Podcast with not just a member of the 2005-06 championship winning Reading FC team, but a member of, well, pretty much every team for the next few years after that and a couple of years before. It's Ivo Ingemarsson who joins us this week. We're absolutely delighted to have him. I'm your host, Mark Mayer, and joining me before I bring Ivo in is the man who's been doing some absolutely fantastic work with bringing some interviews into the Tilehurst End, and he'll be joining me for this interview tonight, and that is Mark Ibarra. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, I'm fine. And it's a pleasure to be on here with you and being part of that podcast. And, well, it's even a bigger pleasure to do this podcast with someone who I always enjoyed watching so much, like Ivar Ingemarsson. So, yeah, that's fantastic.
And let's bring Ivo in then. How's it going, mate?
Very well. Thank you, guys. And thank you for having me.
No, that is absolutely a pleasure. I was just thinking before this, we're probably about just past halfway of the 05-06 team now for having them on the podcast. So we're getting there. One day I'll be able to release a box set of all the sort of first team squad, but we're slowly getting there. And Ivo, we'll talk about that team and everything in a bit. But let's start with how things are going for you at the moment. You grew up in a small village, and Marco sent me this. I'm probably going to say it wrong. It's Stodvarfjordur. Is that about right?
Not bad. Yeah, not bad. That's pretty close to it. Stodvarfjordur. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You've been doing your research.
And after you finished your career, you returned to that eastern part of Iceland with Egilsstaðir.
Yeah, that's right. Egilsstaðir, that's right. Yeah, basically, yeah, Stodvarfjordur is where I was born. Lived there till I was about 16. It's if you did your Google search, then it's a small fishing village in the east coast of Iceland. And I think, the population when I was living there was 350. And it is as far away from Reykjavik City as you can get. So you're right. Also, when I moved back here, I want to move back to East Iceland, but I didn't move to that small town. I moved to a much bigger town called Egilsstaðir, and the population here is about 3,000.
Yeah, and it must be an interesting way to have adapted yourself from the lifestyle of being a footballer, and particularly, you know, in the southeast of England, pretty urban place, to back to that sort of natural, amongst the nature lifestyle.
Yeah, but in a way, the life is always similar. Most of the places, luckily, Iceland is pretty well developed, and we are off to the newest things, even in the East Coast. I would say the difference for me was, in a way, bigger, just moving from East Coast even to Reykjavik when I was 15, 16 years old. That was even a bigger step for me, I think, than, you know, even moving from Reykjavik to England or then back to Iceland again. Growing up in a very small fishing village in East Iceland, and then go to Reykjavik, live partly on your own to try to, manage to do your dream to become a football player. Those were a little bit harder years than actually moving to England. I was 22 when I moved to England, so I was like a grown-up man, and I had seen a little bit of the world before I got there. But then moving back was easy also. That's been a relatively easy process.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Ivo. I also checked that, we checked that on the internet, and you own two guest houses over there, a farm and the geothermal bath, which your former teammate Dave Kitson already enjoyed at the beginning of this year. Was it always your plan to go back home and do something that protects in some way the environment?
Yeah, well, my thinking, and both me and my wife, we were always, I'd always decided we wanted to move back to Iceland. It was not because we didn't like it in England. We absolutely loved it. But we had been away for about 13 years or so. And even if we got our family quite often over, then we wanted to move back to our roots and closer to our family, parents, and so on. I also wanted my children to move up or been raised up, have a chance to have a similar environment as I had, the freedom of playing out and access to both schooling and sports and all that stuff is absolutely brilliant here. So that was very much in our mind. I probably think the last maybe last 1 or 2 years, when you starting to get old as a football player, when my mind had crossed about East Iceland and possibly doing something in the tourist industry. And that is basically what we did when we moved to Iceland in 2012, in the year after, before the summer 2013, we bought our one of the guest houses you mentioned, and then we bought another one, and that has been our main basically work. That said, we have actually, that chapter has ended. We actually sold one of it, and well, actually both of them stopped with both of them, and we went to school. There was nothing to do in the COVID, and there was no tourists arriving to Iceland. So we took the decision to move our plans a little bit forward, and both of us went to registered into school, to university, and we have been just finishing my exams. My wife has her last exam tomorrow, and then it's just Christmas holiday.
I wish her good luck from us. What is the exam of interest?
I'm studying sociology. I think you would probably call it sociology. It's 3 years study after the University of North of Iceland. You can go to university either in Reykjavik or in the capital of the North. And I'm taking it basically online with the university in Akureyri, learning about history from 1500 to date and so on. I think it's brilliant.
Sure.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. So we'll let's go back to the early days then. As you said, you moved over to England at the age of 22, I think you said it was. From the first official move you made was from IBV to Torquay. I was seeing earlier, I think you had a trial at Norwich perhaps the year before that. And this move to England from Iceland, obviously, even, you know, back in the day, Iceland not considered much of a footballing nation, much more so now, perhaps because of players like yourself. But how did that move come about to trade IBV for Torquay?
Yeah, well, like I mentioned, I moved to Reykjavik when I was 16, and I basically moved there to obviously further my career. There are only 10,000 people who live in East Iceland, the whole of East Iceland, one-sixth of the country. And there were no teams there in the higher leagues. So I was starting to play with under 16. And I just saw it there and then that if I wouldn't move to Reykjavik, then I wouldn't have a chance of becoming a further international player and have a chance of a professional. That was the time I was starting to think, you know, I could become a professional. Then I moved to Reykjavik and EIPV, as you mentioned, and I'm there for about 6 years. And at that time, there were quite a lot of Norwegian players going to England. And what then happened was that the Norwegian club were starting to look at the Icelanders to recruit them. So that was more or less the situation. Then obviously, some of the agents figured out that they probably could just take the Icelanders before they went to Norway. It was cheaper, probably their thinking. And at that time, when I was playing under in the younger international team, there were quite a lot of scouting or scouts on the games. And actually, I signed up with one of those. I went actually first before going to England. I had a contract offer at Hammarby, a premium club in Sweden. But I wanted to test myself a little bit in England because this club was struggling a little bit. They could possibly get downgraded down a league. So I wanted to see what other options were there. And I went to Torquay in England on a trial, signed a 1 month contract there. I scored in my first games, not many goals that I scored, but then it was a good timing for me, and Brentford then signed me just after that, and that was more or less my road to England.
Yeah, and like you said, you signed for after that trial with Torquay in, I think it was November 99. 2 years later, Steve Coppell came in as your new manager. Did you hit it off instantly?
I probably wouldn't say that as such. But he was a relatively quiet person. England was still a little bit new to me. And I'm pretty sure he was thinking, who is this strange Icelander? Obviously, having to already had worked with Hermann Hreiðarsson, I'm probably a little bit more quiet than he is. I think we got on quite well. And, he obviously came in and changed things a little bit at Brentford, was very organized and very calm as such. And it was very, very good to work around him. And it suited me, as probably seen. You know, I worked with him at Brentford. I worked with him at Brighton and then obviously at Reading. He obviously put me in more as a defensive player at Brentford, put me in the defence there. The season when he came, that we did really well. And the season I had was good, even if the team itself were more or less broken off after the season. And I moved to Wolverhampton and then we obviously rejoined at Brighton. But it suited me very well working with him. And probably say it straight away that I probably owe my professional football career more or less to him. Most of the time I played for him. And, he showed trust in me and I tried to do well for him. And, it was a relationship that worked well for us, I think.
Yeah, one of the first, or perhaps the first, real instance that you came across Reading was in that memorable, you might disagree with me on this saying this, but the memorable final day of the season in 2002 at Griffin Park. And I was looking earlier, and it strikes me now that there was obviously yourself, there was Steve Sidwell, Stephen Hunt, Lloyd Owusu playing for Brentford in that game, obviously all went on to Reading after that. What are your memories of that day and obviously going up against Reading in that scenario?
Yeah, I remember the day as such, but warmness sticks into me, the celebration of actually getting promoted and getting up, and that sticks to your mind. And obviously knowing about Reading then, you know, it was a team with a beautiful stadium. At that time, I didn't know that I was going to go there. Didn't cross my mind there, even though later in that year, I was told there was an interest from Patro, I think it was, the manager at the time, but that never went anywhere further. But those sorts of moments where other teams celebrate and get some great success, this is something that you want to get as well. So probably that is the main memory I would probably take away from that. Everything that happens in your life is a stepping stone, and this was one of the first probably where you experience the celebrations of another team getting promoted like that. And we had it obviously later at Reading, I think when it was Wigan who got promoted later. I think all those things sticks with you, and you want to taste the same.
Yeah, well, shortly afterwards, after that last match against Reading, you signed for the next season for Wolves, but reunited shortly after with Coppell again while being on loan at Brighton, as you said before. When you went to Reading, did you expect he might come in and ask you again to sign?
I wasn't really thinking about it, to tell you the truth. I was not playing at Wolverhampton at that time. For me, it was a big step going to Wolverhampton in the beginning, and I thoroughly enjoyed it while I was playing. Because when you don't, it's not as fun. But when I got the interest from Reading and from Coppell, like I said, I wasn't thinking about it. But when I heard about that interest, I knew that that would be the club I would like to go to. I went down to Reading, I was shown around the stadium. I was impressed by that. And I think I thought to myself, this could be a club And I think I even said it at my first interviews there that this could be a club that had the chance to do something. But I would say the main reason, though, at the time was actually signing off for a manager who knew my ability, and also having not been playing for a first team. You know, at Wolverhampton at the time, I wanted to go to someone who knew me, and I had been on loan with Brighton and done quite well there, I think. And when you know there's a manager who has a belief in you, then that plays a big part. And I don't regret going to Reading, that's for sure.
No, I should hope not. And you said earlier that that when you came across Steve Coppell, he found someone who was almost quieter than him, which I was trying to picture in my mind as Steve Coppell, renowned as almost one of the quietest managers in football in his day. And how did that sort of relationship side of things work when you were, you know, talking about tactics and everything like that and trying to respond to you know, being behind at half-time teams, that sort of stuff? Were you both very calm? Could you both just sort of get on the same wavelength and say, yeah, we know what to do here, no one needs to get angry or too emotional?
I think it's probably to do with the nature of the personalities. You asked me in the beginning when I met Poppel at Brentford, I was a rather shy person myself. You know, more or less than just because moving to a new country. One of the things, though, you know, when you say shy, I would say rather he would have, you know, possibly shy, but more calm. His style is just being calm, and obviously he could raise his voice and make his opinion known. Otherwise, he wouldn't have become so successful. But his style of managing teams at least suited me well. No, not much shouting, just clear messages and stuff like that. And talking about talking, I remember one of the things that he said to me when I came to when I was starting to play as a centre half at Brentford. He came to me and said, "Ivar, you need to speak more," which is actually obviously quite funny in a sense. But his advice was, you need to speak more, you need to communicate, you need to tell people around you what to do and what you expect of them and stuff like that. And that was probably not natural for me as such, but it definitely helped me out. And just realizing how you can affect the game around you, your teammates and stuff like that, by talking and letting them know where you are situated on the pitch and stuff like that. These are such a moment that makes a big difference, and it made me much better player. At Reading, his style was very Reading at Brighton. His style were in the same way, very calm. But people knew if he was not happy, and if you didn't play up to the standard of the team or what he wanted, then you just lost your position. You don't have to scream and shout to tell people that. You will find out.
Mm-hmm. And you played every minute of that 2005-2006 championship winning season. What would you say was the easiest part of that season, and what was the hardest?
It was just all easy. Now, obviously, we lost the first game of the season, so that was a bit of a shock, but probably a good thing afterwards. And then we went on a good run. After that game, there was obviously talk, and I'm sure there must have been some sort of doubts and all sorts of things going on. But we knew we had to improve, and that was the message. And we did that. We responded very well. Then when you are in a team which just keeps on winning and keeps on playing well, you just start to believe that you cannot lose. And I remember going into every game, you thought you were going to win, even if we went one goal down. You just didn't, I just never thought we could lose as such, except when it came to a little bit to the end of the run. We were in a tough, playing quite a lot of games, and you could feel there was a tiredness. And probably in a way, it was just good to lose against Luton and get that out of the way and then start winning or drawing again. But the season, I cannot remember. If you speak to Glenn Little, I'm sure he can tell you what the weather was on the day and how he curled the ball into the head of somebody. I can't remember a single minute of these games. I just remember the season was unbelievable. I remember how it was a nice feeling when we got finally officially were promoted. It was just a very enjoyable season overall.
Yeah, you've kind of preempted my question now, and I'm worried that you said you don't remember any of it, because my next question just says the word memories. So, but particularly for that Leicester game, which was the one which clinched promotion then, and it was a difficult game for Reading. As you said, there might have been some tiredness going on. Reading, Kevin Doyle getting that late equaliser to send Reading up. And what were your memories of hearing the news that Reading had been promoted, and then your feeling then as you were stood there celebrating, knowing that you were a Premier League player?
It was a beautiful feeling, absolutely brilliant feeling, and celebrating there in front of the travelling fans and stuff like that. It was very nice. But then you just don't dwell on it too long. You know, you are not a Premiership player yet. You are only part of a team that's going to be in the Premiership. And then, you know, there is going to be a lot of signings and there is going to be a lot of competition. And just becoming a Premiership player is nothing if you don't play. So I think that was more or less my thinking of it. I knew I had to improve my game. I knew there would be a competition. And so in that sense, the celebration is short. But that is the way football has always been for me. You get 10 minutes of celebration, and then you need to think about next game or next year or whatever it was. So it was a little bit like that. But of course, it was brilliant. People, you know, I think the gaffer threw his jacket or something into the crowd, wasn't it, with his wallet. You cannot forget things like that. Luckily, I think he got it back. Your mind is just, you know, moves on to the next game and next thing. But it's beautiful 10 minutes.
Well, speaking about brilliant things, you built a brilliant partnership with Ibrahima Sonko at centre-back. What do you think made you two so strong?
I think because we were different in a way than different types of players, possibly. It was brilliant to play with Sonko, an absolutely a lovely person, really nice person. when you see Sonko at first, you think, oh my God, this is a massive guy. But very, very nice, good person. And I was actually laughing about it. Well, laughing, I don't know why I was laughing about it, but I have started to listen, while I'm studying, I do listen to classical music. And my kids were making fun of me of that. And I was telling them, they were asking me, when did I start doing that? And that was actually when I met Sonko. Because he had classical music in his car, he told me. And I thought it was absolutely not something that he would be listening to. I don't know why that is, but this is the way your minds are. Young person listening to a classical music and stuff like that. That is more or less what I mean. You see a person and then you get to know him. We had a very good relationship on and off the pitch, even if we were different types of such different stages in our life. I was you know, probably much more calmer person in my private life and things like that, but we just got on really, really well, and I think we complemented each other very well. To play with him was absolutely, absolutely brilliant, and worked out very well. I probably talked more, but then I could ask him to take more of the headers, and I could cover him, and I think we just benefited well playing with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And what other sort of people in the dressing room, what other players in the dressing room did you find you clicked and spent more sort of time with away from the game?
I think, obviously, while we were travelling, I was often, obviously, roommate with Sonko. But then, like I said, my life after training and football were more or less home with my family. So And the people that I socialized most with out of the training ground would be Kitson and Bobby Conway. But that is not to say that you didn't get along with people or nothing like that. You did. You just are in very different places of your life. There are different ages. There are people from 16, 18 up to 30, 30 plus or something like that. But definitely these two, and I have kept stayed in touch with Kitson, a little bit to Bobby, but mainly to Kitson. But then you just move back home and your life is there, and you've got a lot of people and family and friends there, and your life is basically where you live. If I would meet most of these people again, then it would be great, and it would be like you just at the Mathemon training ground yesterday or something. But your just life goes into different directions, but the team itself, it was full of nice people, I would say, and that was also the part of why it worked. There were young people coming into the team, all the Irish, the bubbly Irish. I like them. The you know how you know enthusiastic and happy they were most of the time. Loved their accent. And then you had the older players who were there eager to, you know, prove themselves in different ways. It was just a good mixture of a group. And the working, the working environment of the training ground and before games were very good. I think everybody could come into this and be themselves and actually get the best out of themselves. So it was just a good group of people. Without necessarily all blending and being together after the games or after training.
And that first Premier League season was definitely very special. I mean, do you have also any special memories of that season? I suppose maybe the home win against Man City, where you scored the decisive goal. Got knocked out, kept on playing, nearly scored another one. So are there any special memories about that Premier League season?
Don't remember that much, at least. of course. When I say, obviously going into the Premiership, because you mentioned how what kind of feeling was it to get promoted? Yeah, it was great. Of course it is great. But then you are going into the Premiership season where all the pundits in the TVs and the radios were saying Reading is going to get relegated. Reading needs to buy 10, 15 players, otherwise they're going to go directly down. So you knew about that sort of a pressure. And then going into the first game in the Premier League with knowing what the specialists are thinking. It was a little bit daunting, if you can say so, and we were probably a little bit taken back. We were, because we obviously went 2-0 down in the first game, but then we managed to regroup and to come back and actually win that game was a massive change for everybody. Because if you are in new territory and you go possibly a few games and you don't win, then you start doubting yourself. By going into this game, actually go 2-0 down and manage to come back, it just made the season. People knew we belong here. We can play here. And it doesn't matter what the specialist on BBC or Match of the Day or wherever will say, we belong here. We worked hard to get here and we want to show people that we can actually play here. And I think that was more or less the mindset. And then obviously the more and more got into the season and we got good results, this belief builds in the team. And you could also fall on the season before. We knew how to win. We knew how to grind games out if we needed. And we were a very well-drilled team. And that obviously helped. And I remember, I think in this season, the only team that really totally outplayed us was Arsenal. We didn't have a much chance against them, but that's because they were probably the best at the time to play very close triangle game, and when we were trying to play our drilled offsides or whatever, they were just too good, and they managed to get behind this more than any other teams. But apart from them, you always felt you were in the game. And that was a good feeling.
It was, and this is the thing, is that you were the ever-present in the championship-winning season. You were then ever-present again, bar some time taken off the pitch for the Man City game. And you were player of the season as well in 2006-07. And what did that mean to you as a player who, you know, you're quite an understated guy when it came to the media and everything. You weren't obviously scoring 20 goals a season. You're part of a part of a sense about partnership. But to get that individual award must have been something special.
Yeah, it was. It was a really nice feeling to actually to get that. Probably also because I probably didn't really expect it either. And to be a defender in a Premiership first year in a Premiership to get it normally. Somebody who people remember more probably get it. But it was a very nice feeling. Also in a very strong team. And there were a lot of players in this team which could have had this prize. You don't end up where we did in the league except more or less 9, 10 out of 11 players starting played well for the long time of the season. We had players in... Shuri got called up for the international team. I think Kitson got as well. And we had a lot of international players in the team. So, and quite few of them could have had it, but I did. And it was a very nice feeling to get that and very nice recognition from the people of Reading, I think.
And apart from that, Arsenal match you mentioned already, was there maybe a favorite game of the season you could name as a match where you remember maybe as a key for the success you had during that season? Was there any favorite game you could mention?
I would mention the first game. That's the game that's just in my mind. It was just such an important game for us. And of the reasons that I mentioned, that everybody was saying we were going to go down and we needed to buy more players. And I'm sure the staff and everybody as well was nervous for the game in a way. You know, they were giving a lot of us the player who took the team up, the chance again. And we obviously had made some additions, good additions to the team, but it was just the game that made the season. So for me, that is by the far most important game. But then there were other games in the season where you go to places like, you can say, where you go to Man United at Old Trafford and places like that, or my club that I had always followed, like Liverpool, and we were lucky to play them quite often, both in the league and then in the cup games. Those were the games that I do remember. But the first game stands out. And people do ask me exactly this, what are your memories? It is a little bit crazy to say, but I just don't remember a lot from the games. I went into the games, and I probably, one of the things that I decided when I went to the Premiership, I'm not going to think about the crowd. I'm just going to try to block it out. And I had the same speech in my mind for every game about the way I was going to approach it. And one of the things that I said to myself was not thinking about the crowd, just enjoy it and soak up the energy. And, I don't remember much from the games. So please don't ask me about the weather or how many times. I just don't remember.
Well, I was going
to
say...
Maybe it has to do with being a centre-half and having to head too many balls also.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I'll be honest with you. As I've said earlier, I've interviewed a couple of the players from this team now, and they always get to this part of the interview, which is the part that I always dread. And it's always the kind of, we've done the uphill, now we kind of have to cover the downhill to an extent. And one of the things that I suppose you might be able to shine a light on then is how Reading going from eighth one season to obviously in the relegation zone the next season, and in the summer before that relegation season, what was the sort of feeling around the club? Was it a case of, you know, maybe we can do it again? Was there a bit more nervousness? Were some players maybe trying to leave? How did the club feel as you were going into that relegation season?
I think before the season, I felt, and I probably said it in some interviews, that I didn't believe in the second season syndrome. How wrong was I there? But I still I don't think it should be natural that you get relegated. But there are many things that affect a football team. I mentioned the season where we got the 106 points and how everything. People were improving, wanted to improve and wanted to show what they could. And there was this combinedness of just doing some good, great stuff. We were also at the, then we go to the Premier League and there were a lot of players who were playing well. Reading was not a club that, how to say it, paid the best salaries or stuff like that. And they were tough also negotiating. I remember my time there, for example, I was, while I was playing at Reading, I was never offered a contract. I had to ask for a contract. And I went into the Premiership on the, probably one of the shittiest contracts in Premier League ever. Because probably, you know, they just didn't see any reasons to give me a new contract for getting promoted. You had to fight for it. And I think that was one of the reasons. A lot of the players went into the Premiership, did really well. There were other clubs who wanted them. And the Reading was probably not willing to pay the salaries that they felt they probably should get. There were clubs offering them maybe the transfers of their life and they were not allowed to go and stuff like that. All of these sorts do affect the chemistry of the team. There's no question of that. It's just natural. So I think one of the reasons was, you know, Reading was a superly, very, very well-run club. But also then part of the downhill was there, that they were not willing to possibly open the wallet when they needed to for some of the players. And they probably kept some of the players a little bit too long instead of allowing them to go. I think that those sorts of things played a little bit around. The chemistry was not, it was just not the same as the year before. I think that, and then I'm not saying it was bad, but it was, because it wasn't, it was good. But for a team like Reading to stay in the Premier League and do well, things just have to be working well and somehow be well together. And it was just a little bit missing. But that, and you also have to think about it. It was only, what, three goals.
Yeah.
So it was not like it was catastrophic, but it was so disappointing, and especially because the way the season had been the year before. And I thought till the last game that we were going to stay in the Premier League. I really, really felt so. Because my thinking of football is this: you don't become a bad player or a good player. Just, it doesn't change in a week. You still have the ability. You still have the personality. You are still you as the football player. But there are things both in the environment, inside the team, outside the team, that can affect the way team play and how individuals in those team play. And we were just not collectively and individually as good as the season before, and there were those things, and I'm sure something else also that played a part in it.
In that relegation season, especially the final weeks were decisive. What would you say went especially wrong in these final weeks when the season was going into its last matches, and at least the maybe 1 point more would have been enough. But what would you say was missing in that period?
Well, that's the thing. It's not the period. It's the whole season. If we had got 1 point in the first three games, one more point in the first three games, or in the middle period, the football is just a combination of all the points that you get through the season. And somehow people look at the points in the last week as more important than the end. And maybe that was missing for us. Maybe not collecting enough points in the beginning was the problem. Not that we didn't collect them in the end. But what does happen if you are struggling at the bottom half of the season? It's so much worse place to be at. You don't get the happy feeling as a person or as a player. The buzz around the club is, instead of, you know, just flying high, you are, you know, almost into a depression if you are losing. The media is more negative. Everything is more negative. And the pressure does build. And it's hard to play under that. So I would say those are the things that you want to try to avoid, obviously. And I wish we would have not been in that relegation battle in the last weeks, because that is really hard. But was it the last weeks we lost it or got relegated? No, it was just the combination of the whole season. And we were not good enough then. If you go down, it's because you were not good enough. And there was this little bit missing. And we really did our things at, I think it was a derby, wasn't it, at the last game? Was it 4-0 or something we won?
Yeah.
And I always remember, was it Danny Murphy or someone who scored for Fulham?
Yeah,
against,
it was, yeah.
Against Portsmouth. One of the few things I do remember. And I was thinking, like, this is the smallest guy on the football pitch who had the ball almost from the penalty spot. How ironic is that? And I remember, actually, it was Herman Reyerson, my friend and teammate, was playing, and I was like, how could you not stop this guy from scoring? But this is the way it is. And it had it. But the point is, it was not that game that lost it. It was the combination of the whole season. We just needed to be better. And thinking about it, we only needed to be this little bit better at one game. But this is the life of the professional football players or the professional sport. The difference between success and failure is just this. You know, if we had this extra point, everybody would have talked about actually a successful point or successful season. But then this is the way it was. And it definitely took a little while to get over that. Very disappointing because I'm sure for some of us also, especially maybe the older players, then this was our chance to be in the Premier League, and it's hard to get there again. These are the things that come into your mind. Will I get the chance again? And in my for example case, it didn't happen, and for a few of the other lads, it didn't. Some of the young lads went on and had a brilliant career. But you know, if you get into the Premiership, make sure you do everything to stay in there, because it's a hard place to get to.
No, I seem to remember as well that Portsmouth team that lost to Fulham on the final day were in the FA Cup final as well. So if they would have lost the FA Cup semi-final, they might have put out a proper team on that day. They might. It's all those tiny little details that build up, isn't it? And it just goes to show. And also with the with that summer, you said about the sort of pressure and feeling about getting back there as well. I seem to remember that Steve Coppell was so close to resigning during that summer after the relegation season. Do you remember how that was panning out? Whether you spoke to him, whether you were, you know, trying to persuade him to stay and all those sort of things?
No, that's something that I didn't do. And to tell you the truth, you know, speaking to the governor, I didn't do that very often. But I obviously knew about when you start hearing these things, that was something that we did not want to. We did not want to, or I didn't want him to quit. And I was very happy with him to stay on. And I absolutely think that was the right thing. But it just also show how, shall we say, you know, how much pressure he puts on himself. That feeling that somehow that he had to quit with the team just because he got relegated. Actually, instead of thinking it, most people would have thought of it just just to get Racing into the Premiership and staying there for two seasons was just a hell of an achievement. But obviously for him, he felt that you know, it was some sort of a disappointment. And I think it just shows more what kind of personality he was or he is. But luckily he stayed on. And the thing is, with the season afterwards, it is difficult to motivate a team and get the team back on a track. I think we did well though. We were doing quite well in the first half of the season after the relegation. But there is always this bad feeling that you have been in the Premiership and you are not there any longer. And even if you're trying to get there, it's just natural that at some time it just plays on your mind and it can affect you also. And I think that's the reason often when teams go down, it's just very difficult to bounce straight up again. I thought we did quite well, but we just, again, it was just a little bit missing, and we couldn't bounce back again. But that's what I'm not sure if it gets through. It's such a disappointment. That's the thing. It's the same with players who have been playing in the Premier League maybe for a long time, and then they have to downgrade or move to clubs in lower leagues. It's just hard. Because it's always playing on your mind what you have. And you need to find these teams. It can be done, of course, but people and individuals need to manage to get that out of the mind and actually just start playing on the level they are on and do what it takes to pre-perform. And we were just a little bit short. And we couldn't bounce back again.
Mm-hmm. Maybe something like a little back that you have to take through all the matches. Now, after that negativeness, after that relegation, you always have this back of this disappointment with you in all the matches. Now, and as you said, basically the following season was quite positive. Unfortunately, the team failed to win the playoff in that championship season. You missed the end of that season when Koppel in the end left. Was it for you the natural end of an era?
When a manager of Steve Koppel influence leaves a club, it is definitely a end of an era as such. And also, obviously, after the season, the Premiership season, it was also, there were quite a lot of players who obviously moved on, or people who moved on. And then that changes the team. And you have to think about it to do what we did as winning 106 points. It just doesn't happen every season. There is a reason for it. There are so many factors that has to come together. Right set of players, right set of staff, right set of environment. There was the drive of the young players. There was the drive of the older players who wanted to succeed. We got in a manager who basically took over. It didn't change anything. He kept all the stuff more or less, and somehow you molded a team that was capable of getting these results. And soon as you start taking out one or two pieces of it, it changes the whole chemistry. People often say, "What's team?" And there's a player that comes in, and the team certainly starts winning. And everybody say, "Oh, this player is so great. He is changing everything." Instead of it's just the piece that was missing. All the other players are doing all the stuff before. It was just this piece that makes the whole puzzle. And that's the same when you have a team that is was playing like we did. And when you start missing pieces out of it, it does change and it takes time to get it again. And it's hard to get that kind of a combination again. And I think that was just what happened. And then obviously when you have a manager like Steve Koppel leaving, then it is difficult to replace that, and those sorts of things normally take time, and there is a change of manager, change of coaching stuff and stuff like that. You need to rebuild again in a way.
One of the key parts of that rebuilding process, and it actually makes me think, it's a little bit weird in my mind to kind of connect those two eras, because they are so different in how the teams are built up, as you say, and the management that was involved. But one of the factors of this new era post Steve Coppell was a little plucky playmaker called Gylfi Sigurdsson, who came through into the first team at that time. And how well did you get to know him as a fellow Icelander, of course?
Well, lucky just to know him quite well. He was obviously, 14 years old, 15 years old when he was starting to come to Reading. I knew him very well. He was, knew his family well. They moved out with him, his parents, and they were, just visitors at our home and we at theirs. So got to know them very well. Gylfi was just a very special player, very focused, very determined, did all his extra training and stuff like that, and very, very calm and very gifted, and no surprise that he has had the career he has had, and without a doubt one of the best players Iceland has had. And I think still, I know now, we're not talking about him possibly, but I know he's having a little of a, difficult ride now, obviously, with his club not playing as much as he had, but he's still in a good age, and I'm absolutely sure he will come through that and have a good few years ahead of him as well. Talking about changes, obviously, when you have Steve Coppell leaving, obviously, later on, Brian McDermott comes in, where you have a person who knew the club in and out. But between that, we had Brendan Rodgers, obviously, taking over. You can see how successful he has been since he was there. Obviously, things didn't go very well after Reading, but it just shows how football is. You are not always successful where you go. That doesn't mean that you are a bad player or a bad manager. Sometimes things just don't work out, the environment isn't right. But if you keep on working at it and doing the right stuff, then you will get what you deserve. And I think that's just a good story of that also.
Yeah, and talking about that spell under Brendan Rodgers, did you find it tough to adapt to that change of style?
Yes, I would say so. And I, at the time, I spoke to Brendan the Gaffa then probably more than I spoke to Steve Coppell in a way, or he to me. He was a very open person, very talkative. His trainings were brilliant. The setup of the training, the skills and the passing drilling and stuff like that, they were absolutely superb. But obviously we were used to playing in a certain style, and there comes in a coach that wants to play more out from the defense. You want to split the center half off and a lot of touching of the ball. And we were not ready for that quick transition. And I remember at one point just saying that to him, that we were maybe... it was just not working in the way that he wanted, and maybe we had to, play a little bit closer to what we knew, just to get some sort of a confidence and balance again. It was in a way difficult and sad to see us not getting the results. And you could see what he wanted to do. But in the way, maybe we were just not the right players for him to do that. And he has obviously gone on and done very well with his club and what he's doing at the Leicester now, and did in Scotland, and obviously have a chance to manage Liverpool. You don't get that if you don't know what you're doing. But it just didn't work for us. And also, it's not like he was given a lot of time. If you think about it, we had been a successful team, and if you then have a bad run or period as we did, then the board and the owner of the football clubs today are not that patient either, are they?
Yeah, well, I was just wondering, actually, I wonder what did he say to you when you went up to him and said, oh, maybe this isn't working? Because he might have looked at you even as a young manager. He might have thought, you know what, Ivo, you've been here a long time. You've had a lot of success at this club. But nonetheless, I'm sticking to my guns, because he seems to me the sort of manager who would be so confident in himself that even you going and saying, you know, it's not quite working, he'd still be there thinking that I'm gonna play this out how I want to do it.
Of course, that's what managers have to do. You know, this is to be a manager is not easy, and I'm not going to tell anybody how to be a manager. But at that time, as a senior player and being playing, and we were struggling, you could feel we were. This was a little bit out of our comfort zone, I felt. And like I said, we had been playing for a certain style. Our style was very much quickly off to the wing, as quick as you could off forward and crosses. And now we were going to play the ball a little bit between us at the back. And we got caught out quite often. And, you know, when the centre half was split, ball lost in the midfield, or we lost it, then we were trying to run and regain possession defensively, and we were getting a lot of goals that way back on us. And as a team and individual, when the results are not going for you in a way, then you do start losing a little bit of confidence, and players without confidence, they don't perform the way they should. So it's not like when and you as a senior player, you just feel also the responsibility to say those things. He took it very, very well. There was nothing wrong with that. And I think he just appreciated what I said. Whether he did make some changes to that or not, I don't know. But at least I said it. It was what I felt, and I did say that. The time he got was not that much, was it? And we went back to something that the club knew when you got Brian McDonald coming in. And the style of play was moved back to something that this group of players was comfortable to, and the results started picking up quickly. And again, that is not saying that Brian McDonald wasn't a good manager. It was just at that time for us, with the group of players he had, it just didn't work out, and the time was not there for him. And then he just moves on and shows that his thinking of football was right, and he gets success with it.
And one of the decisions he did make that certainly was popular, I think, as well, was to make you club captain. And you've been described as in that sort of period as a natural leader. And it's interesting how that's been said, and how earlier on you were saying about how quiet you were, how you had to learn to talk to players on the pitch and everything. Would you agree with the definition of yourself as a natural leader?
Sorry. I think this is probably fitting, because it probably describes my feeling of something like a natural leader. Then no, I wouldn't describe myself as that. And I never really asked or wanted to be a captain. Now, to be a club captain, it was nice. But you almost just feel like it's, you know, you're a player who have been there for a while, whether it was a club captain or not. It didn't really change the way I think I was, but it was obviously you recognize that you're given that sort of a responsibility because of something, but it didn't change the way I behaved, I think. I think in the way I played or whatever, maybe a little bit in the way where you maybe felt you have you had on occasion to express, for example, this if things were not working with the team, that you had to speak up about those things. But overall, regarding captaincy in this Reading team and in the era we were there, there were a lot of players who were captains. That was also the reason why the team was so successful. Graham Murphy did really, really well as a captain over the years when I was there. But he also did so well because there were lots of players supporting him and didn't create any problems or anything, and were captains themselves without being it. And that was the same as I felt when I was given the club captain at the time. At first, it was a little bit like a honorable role. So I just kept on doing the things that I had done obviously before.
And like you said, after the sacking of Rodgers, Brian McDermott came in. What was your relation with him before he took over?
Very good. Very good. Brian McDermott obviously was a massive part of the team, of the success of Reading before he was a manager, and obviously successful as when he was a manager. But he scouted most of the players, a lot of the players at Reading. And what a players he did scout. And, you know, players who in sense of football, now cost peanuts. The Reading team not got promoted, it's not like there was a lot of money spent on it. And a lot of it was off to Brian McDermott. He had a very good sense, obviously, for picking off players and scouting players. And he must have been absolutely one of the best in that. His record just speaks for itself there. I always spoke to him when I met him. I always said, "Good morning, wise man." He always reminded me of some sort of a Buddha guru or something, like bald-headed with glasses, really calm, spoke very well. So, I got on very well with Brian.
And the success that he had in the team as well, it was, you know, certainly a case of Reading fans kind of knew about him as well, and he came into the team at a time when we really did need a lift, and in a relegation battle quite quickly turned into a really fun end of that first season with Brian McDermott. Obviously, there was the Liverpool win in the FA Cup. There were a couple of other cup runs that you were involved in as well. What was it that Brian did that was successful at Reading? Was it a case of his going back to tactical senses that people knew about before, or was there something else that he had done that worked so well?
Only each person brings its own personality to it. But Brian knew the Reading way as it had been before, in and out. He had recruited a lot of the players. He knew their ability and knew their strength. And I think a lot of what he did was going back to the way that, if you can say, a Reading way of playing. Very quick off the wings. Ball wasn't dwelling a lot about. It was just high tempo off. If you can have a chance of crossing, cross it. And if the ball comes in, make sure one of the strikers or someone is going to go at the end of it. So just high tempo and in a way, probably just, a style of play that the players knew. And I think he just brought back the stability to the club, which, over the period, sadly, when Brendan Rodgers was with us, we couldn't produce what he wanted us to produce. Under Brian, we could reproduce it. And then when you win games, then you get more confident. And I think that was the success of that transition. And then obviously for Brian to get the team promoted the year after was just a phenomenal credit to him. I wasn't part of that. I was out then. And that's just the nature of the football. I was getting into the older age of my career. And I had been having a very bad injury, two very, very bad injuries in short period. Took me out for 6 months and 8 months or whatever. And the second injury I had prolonged a lot. And I think the club was just thinking that I was finished in a way. And they obviously brought in new players, which then for good money also. And things just move apart.
Well, as you said, you had these injuries, but even though in your later years at the club, you were still a part of a successful team. How had you personally changed your game and your style at this point?
Well, I didn't have to change it that much. I was never fast, so I didn't lose any speed, did I? And I could still have the ball. No, I felt actually fine. My first injury were knee injury, and they were bad knee injuries actually. And that is what knocked me out there around halfway through the season. And I was actually given the diagnosis that I had was basically for 3-4 days that I had to quit playing football. Because there was the thing, I'm not sure what you call it, but I had to have a, what you call a microfracture operation after it. But before I went into the doctor who looked at it said that I had to quit playing football. And before, maybe 10, if I had had this injury 10 years before then, I definitely would have quit because this was the main reason why sport people had to quit. And then came off this microfracture operation where you drill into the bone and there is a bleeding that creates a new surface, basically. That's the theory. But the doctor I met at the time said to me that I had what I think was described as a bone crumble. So he thought that basically the bone was drilling it wouldn't work because it was basically the surface of it was dead. So that was basically the news I got. For probably 4 or 5 days, I thought my career then was ended. And I always remember driving up to the hospital where I had the operation of the specialist. And he was speaking to me. We were two of us, the players who were having this injury. There was a young player, which I didn't meet him or whatever. But basically, before the operation, it was my career should be ended. And very likely his operation should be good. But then I woke up from the operation. I was told your operation was a success. And then what about the other chap? Well, he actually had what we thought you had. So his career was finished. So it's strange how things are actually in this. But this was a difficult operation for me. It took me quite a long time to get recovered. But when I recovered, I felt fine. And then I started playing quite a lot of games. And I could feel that playing all those games after those long injury, it was just harder. I could feel I was more tired. And I think actually I'd spoken to Brian McDermott about that I would possibly need a rest because it were a lot of games at this period. And then we go and play Middlesbrough and I pull my, what do you call it, the hamstring muscle from... from off where it connects up in the ass or around there. So you just pull it down and that was very disappointing. And it took me too long time to recover from it because when I got back, I always had this pain and I think, at the time, I almost thought like the club was just, thought I was imagining this because I just tried to play and I always had to get injections and it didn't work. But then they found out what was the problem. I had to have another operation. There was this, I don't know what you call it, not the bone, but there was the movement. Well, it's too technical, whatever. They opened it up again, and it did like so, and I just woke up without the pain. And I could start playing again. But then it was just too long time passed, really. And I wasn't there. Just finished the season and moved on, really.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I was looking at the stats earlier, Ivo, and they're saying that your final 9 appearances for the club were all unbeaten, which is quite a fitting way, even if we didn't know it at the time, to sort of bow out. And you know, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this evening, and thank you so much for coming on. We've just got a final couple of questions, sort of as your Reading career and your career itself ended so shortly after that. But as you know, the day came to call time on your Reading career and saying goodbye to people at the club and everything, how were the emotions from that? Was it a particularly sad day for you, or were you kind of, in a way, was there a sense of relief that you could call time on such a happy period?
I would not say it would have been a happy to say goodbye. Like you said, the last few games I played, I did well, but I think the focus had already turned, and so when to leave Reading for me wasn't easy, but it just was the way it was. And my period after that, obviously I moved to Ipswich. I was there for a short period of time. I didn't really feel it didn't really work for me. I was probably not the right player from them and the club then at the time and the way things were and what I was used to was not working well for me. And we decided to end terms there halfway through the through that season. I think when I look back at it, I think I was just tired, and I think I just had enough. It was just good time for me to quit. And since I quit, I haven't touched football, more or less. I just didn't touch football for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months or whatever when I quit. I played a little bit of old men's football, if you can say so, here in the summer. People with overweight men who still want to play football. And then I just haven't touched it. And it just tells me that I was tired. I played more or less in my career. I always played every game. I almost played every minute of every game also. And I wasn't the quickest. I wasn't the most talented to be able to play. I think at the standard that I did, it cost a lot of energy. It cost a lot of preparation. I think I was just, you would probably call it almost like a burnout today. that's the best thing I can describe it almost. I know this is a fashion word in work today, burnout, but I think I was just more or less there. I think I had done what I could do, and my time was just there. So I was, when in the end it was finished, was it happy to go away from Reading? Of course not. It was 8 years. It was my best time in football. I had both of my children were born there. I had a great life there. I was set up as a football player there, and I was set up for my life in the future, even now in Reading. So leaving that club was it was not something that I enjoyed doing, but it was also just time for it. And then when the football finished, it was just the right thing, absolutely the right thing. And strange thing, I always thought quitting football would be really hard, because when I was growing up in East Iceland in the fishing village I mentioned, being in football was the most enjoyable thing I'd ever done. Absolutely loved it. To get better, to play, to prepare for games and all that stuff. And I thought it was going to be very hard to quit, but it was no problem. Absolutely, I had no regret. There hasn't been a day where I thought, I wish I had played a little bit longer. it hasn't happened. And I think that's just a sign of it was the right time.
Mm. Yeah. And well, like you said, you retired. Well, what would you say? Well, pretty much early, being aged 34. No, and if you compare that to maybe some other careers, basically there would have been the possibility, you know, to keep on playing 2, 3, or 4 years. But as you said, it felt something like the right moment. Did you have later on still problems with your knee? Can you do sports or running right now without feeling pain, or is that injury still resulting in some problems when you're doing sports right now?
No, that's the thing. It was no problem at all. It hasn't been, but I'm pretty sure when I get to my 60, I will probably need a new knee. But I'm not there yet. But that's also part of it. Because I played, stopped playing when I did stop playing, it's very easy to continue and take those extra, I don't know, 2 years or so. But with my history, I had 2 very bad injuries, which took me out for a long time. And when you have had them, it is you obviously could keep on playing, but I think I would have exactly be in a situation than today where I would be struggling with my body, couldn't play golf or go and play with my kids and stuff like that in the same way as would. So I think the reason why I did stop there at the time also helped me with that. I'm also a great believer in cod liver oil. I've always taken it, and it's supposed to help with sorts of injury like this. And I haven't had a problem yet. I do feel occasionally a little bit of pain, but that's it. Nothing more than that. No problem there. And I cannot use that for excuse for being shit in golf either.
So. Well, maybe, you know, next year is the 15th anniversary of the 05-06 team. Maybe you can get a reunion going, have a little kick around with it. I think, to be fair, I think Sonko's knee is probably the worst of the lot. And I think Glenn Littles are made out of sellotape these days anyway. So,
No, I wouldn't. Yeah, absolutely. It's coming up and meeting together, but playing, no, I wouldn't do that. I have been asked to take part in football matches and stuff like that, and I just don't play. I play with my kids, pass the ball with them, but I don't play, not even for friendly or fun in that way. It's finished totally, and I haven't done that since the summer of 2013, I think. And I'm happy with that. So I will be in the stand if you guys decide to have that sort of a game.
There's always space for you in the stands, certainly at the Medeski, Ivar, and it feels nice. It's really admirable how you can look back on your career and be so comfortable with the way it ended and the fact that it's ended, and you can open the new chapters of your life. And as you were saying earlier with the exams and everything like that, it sounds like you've got a lot of plans and a lot of stuff to look forward to, which is brilliant to hear from a Reading point of view. And it's been brilliant to hear all of the memories tonight, even if some of them are repressed / kicked out of you and all the rest of it. But no, thank you so much for coming on. And Marco as well, I'll say goodbye to you now, Marco. Thank you very much for popping on and helping us out with the interview.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks, Ivar. It was a great pleasure to speak to you, to have the podcast with you. And yeah, I wish you also all the best. And well, as we are already in December, I suppose I can wish you and your family also a Merry Christmas time. So yeah, take care, and thanks, Mark, for having me on your podcast.
Well, let me say, guys, thank you so much for the talk. Absolutely pleasure to speak to you. I hope you understand me, even if my English has got a little bit worse, even if it was not maybe the best, at best of times. But happy Christmas to all of you, hopefully Reading will do it again this year. They're in a good position, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. No, honestly, thank you, Ivar. It's a real pleasure to have you on tonight, and have a good rest of the month, and good luck, and have a good Christmas as well.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Ars!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.